Off the ball. Rugby.
Come off it, yeah. I think it's as low as you can get. Like, I thought that was as bad as it gets in terms of trying to claim this, you know, you're humble and no dickheads and all this.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
This is Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's sports breakfast show.
Ali Donnelly is with us to talk a little bit more about this. Ali, good morning to you. How are you?
Morning. Very nice to be here. And to be talking about such a good, positive thing.
Well, before we get to that, do you cry positively or negatively for sport? Do you cry at all or in sport?
No, I don't cry. I was listening to your conversation and smiling. I don't cry, but I was trying to think about when's the last time I felt massively deflated in sport. And I think it's got to be us being knocked out, the men's team being knocked out of the World Cup. I think I'd opened the door to hope that day and it was cruelly shut in my face, but I didn't cry.
Yeah.
No.
It is, as they say, the cliche about the hope that kills you. Oh my God.
Yep. Never let it in. That's
exactly. We're Irish, of course. That's the only appropriate response is to never let it in. With this, right, like, there's competing emotions. There's a, oh my God, we've beaten this team. It's incredible. But like, what a wasted decade we've had from the last time that we played them and we could have been competitive. And we shouldn't lose sight of that. Like, it's great that the IRFU have finally woken up and it's great that they're doing the things they're doing now. But Jesus Christ, 10 years ago, we had a team of like, and when you look back on that team of some of the most incredible leaders in Irish sport at the moment were in that team, and the IRFU largely turned their back on those women.
Yeah, look, I think the strategy over the last decade has led many to question decisions that are being made about how to grow the game and how to be successful at the top end of the game, which we've not been able to be really since. That said, I think the last few years where professionalism has really come into the kind of high performance end of women's rugby, we have been making much better decisions, I think, in terms of what and how we invest in our top players. And you can see now we've got a very strong coaching team. You saw the way the team played. I mean, that's one of the best strategic performances I've seen from an Irish team for a very long time, perhaps even since that last win against New Zealand. So, you know, yeah, it's been a difficult era, you know, not even just a difficult few years, but difficult era for the Irish women's game. And now I suppose it's about learning the lessons of before and applying that so that we can really grow the game.
The previous decade, and not to harp on about it, this is the last time I'm going to mention it, but the previous decade had been about like almost pitting the sevens against the 15s game. And what seems to be happening at the moment, granted, the calendar is working for us in that the best sevens players are currently playing for the 15s, but there must be some way to use the success of the women's team in terms of the attention that they got during the Olympics and the success of those players playing for the 15s and then hopefully broadening the pool so that we can be relatively competitive in both, but then bringing the best players together for the key moments in whichever of those two fronts that we're trying to fight a battle on.
Yeah, and I think you're absolutely right. The calendar app really does work for us, and the way in which the World Cup cycles have happened because of the COVID changes is a good thing for us. The World Cup's also this side of the world, so you know we're gearing up pretty well there thanks to circumstances we haven't been able to control. On the sevens front, look, what I would say is that most countries have struggled to find a consistent strategy to deal with, I mean, New Zealand apart, probably Australia, to deal with how to merge the two things, especially those countries that have smaller playing bases. And we've been right in the mix there in that. It seems, I think, that the seven circuit will change in the next few years. It's a very expensive circuit for World Rugby to run. And it may be that benefits the 15s programmes in that we may have access to players for longer and the windows will change. But I think what's really important now is that we try and build on the momentum. So a lot of the investment in the Irish women's game is going into the very top end of the game. We are investing heavily in contracts and in coaching staff and so on. And we're starting to reap the benefits of that. I mean, look how athletic and smart and capable our team looked at the weekend, and hopefully we'll continue to be that. It's just really thinking now about how do you use the spotlight of this win to grow the game. And I think, you know, I'm based in London, watching what the FA and women's football did in response to the Euros win has been deeply impressive, and the way in which they were ready to really galvanise and build momentum to grow numbers, which they've done, is definitely the kind of blueprint to doing this.
It was only last year, Ali, in the Six Nations, it was a case of how much Ireland were going to lose by. Are you surprised by how quickly the new coaching setup has made a difference?
Yes and no. Yes, in that, yeah, 17 months ago, rock bottom of the Six Nations table, you know, even early this year, getting, you know, getting absolutely trashed by England. So the growth has been impressive. But at the same time, if you put, you know, if you think about women's sport and women's rugby is right in the middle of that, historical underinvestment means that when you start to invest properly, the gains can be extremely quick. We've seen that with loads of teams who've turned pro or put in place coaches from a professional background or coaches to bring in new ideas. So in that respect, no, because we've always had phenomenal athletes. I mean, you know, we haven't touched on any of the names yet, but we now not only have phenomenal athletes, we've got amazing emerging players coming through. So yes, the transformation has been quick, but no, because isn't that just logical that if you take something that's sort of been, I wouldn't say neglected, but not looked after as best as it could, and you invest properly and in the right structure, then of course you're going to see gains happen pretty quickly.
It's getting to the stage now, the World Cup draw will be after WX competition. Is it getting to the point where other nations should fear Ireland? Is that how quickly the improvement has actually occurred?
It's only been one game and we haven't talked about New Zealand. I thought they were really complacent and they weren't as good as they were. I saw them 2 weeks ago in Twickenham where they were better than they were against Ireland. And of course, we made them look complacent and inferior, but I think that team will get better. So it's too early to say. I mean, it was shocking and sort of amusing afterwards to listen to some of the New Zealand coaching interviews. They didn't even know Aoife Wafer's name. You know, that sort of blew me away. She was our best player this year. So I think that people will sit up and take more notice of us. The Canada game is going to be really tough. They're an amazing team. They're physical. They will not be complacent. They'll watch the game and see where we're strong. So maybe too early to say if teams can sit up and take notice. But God, it's exciting to think about the next year in the lead up to that World Cup with this team.
Can we go back a little bit to what the FA did? Is there an automatic template that the IRFU can look at and go, okay, or it's less a template, more there are some key lessons, kind of overarching strategic ideas that they can...
I mean, I think the one thing is that they were ready and they'd thought about it very carefully and they knew their audience and where they could develop growth. So I was going to give you my own personal example. So I never really played football over here. I played it in Cork a long time ago for a great team called College Corinthians. But after the Euros, where I live in Twickenham, obviously, a women's football team was set up and I went along and everybody there was in their 40s. It was just women like me who hadn't played for years. And they just had such support from the FA to set that team up. They knew in certain parts of the country, there are lots of women who want to play sport again. So I think they were just ready. They had a plan. They used the stars to sort of grow the game and talk about it. And I think it's as much about that. It's not being taken by surprise that the team has started to do well. Oh, now we need to think about this. And for Ireland, with our small playing base, it's just always about hammering growth and understanding how you kind of build that pathway up to the national team so that Scott Beaman's got access to great players for 10 years and not just for two or three, which has often been the case in the past.
Yeah, it's also very well set up in that you can have a small number of players and you can play sevens. And that's the bit where that crossover, if they get the calendars properly aligned, you could have rugby fans who are watching women's rugby all year round where the best players are playing 15s. Some of those are then part of the seven squad. Some of the seven squad are only sevens players. Some of the 15s players are only 15s players. But instead of it being like the competitions are on at the same time.
Yeah, 100%. And that is the way in which it is settling down. So, you know, remember that our pro game in the women's side is very new and everybody was kind of feeling their way, separating, merging, etc. But I think what you've just described there is the model that we will see going forward. You will have some specific athletes that only play one, but we're going to have much more. There'll be much more ability to cross over. And you can see in the squad, can't you, that they've had bigger numbers to train with because of the way the calendar has fallen. And so they're just better prepared. And that makes a huge difference.
In terms of the actual amount of money that the players are getting, there is, I think, some like 30 odd contracted players playing professionally in Ireland at the minute. But the numbers that they're getting paid are still chronically low. In some cases, it's too low for people to give up the day job that they had. Is there a solution to this?
Yeah, it's about being smarter commercially, isn't it? Simple as that for the IRFU to make sure that you can bring investment in, whether that's from TV rights and media deals, or it's from, you know, revenue around the match days, sponsorship, etc., to be able to plug the gap, because that is the same and true of most kind of nascent professional women's sports. There are very few women's sports team, you know, in a team environment where women are making a lot of money on this side of the world. It's different in America, I think, you know, where they're just that bit further ahead. But that's because if you look at, say, the WNBA, where the players, you know, there's a kind of salary cap there, but the players are making decent sums of money. That's because the product around them, so the numbers of fans, the way in which they've created heroes and latched onto the Caitlin Clarks of this world, and the way in which they've made money from TV. So, you know, commercially, you need World Rugby and the IRFU and all of the unions to be really savvy and to kind of be able to sell the truth, which is that this is one of the biggest growth opportunities in rugby. You know, the women's game can do something that, you know, the men's game can't, which is accelerate at a massive pace. So it's just hopefully we've got smart people working in those roles to drive up that revenue so that the player wages can go up.
In order to target that area, the commercial department, for continued growth and rapid growth, does it actually require in the short term to overachieve? So, for example, to repeat the feat this weekend against Canada, in order for potential partners to take notice?
I mean, it doesn't hurt. That is an unfair kind of undue pressure to put on players. But of course, a winning team just naturally draws in momentum. You know, you talk about one of the things that's often held women's sport back is visibility and profile. And you get that when you're winning. And unfortunately, you know, that is just the reality. But I would like to think the kind of the way in which women's sport generally is evolving, you have more and more brands out there sitting up, taking notice, thinking, actually, there's a different kind of return on investment here for me. It might not be a million people watching on RT or whatever it is, it might be that you get much deeper engagement with a fan base and it's slightly different, but I'm willing to go with that because that's actually the way the sport's going. So we're at a really interesting time for women's sport and for investment. And, you know, we saw here in the UK, WSL last week doing a £15 million deal with Barclays. Now, women's football is obviously in a different place to rugby, but the opportunity is definitely there.
It's funny, Ali, you're talking about essentially a mind shift from the powers that be in a very traditionally fusty, conservative rugby unions. And I'm loath to draw too many parallels with the GAA situation at the moment, where what we're hearing is that the GAA are demanding $600 million to go ahead with the integration because there won't be enough facilities otherwise to allow the women to play in their facilities. And I can't get my head around why the GAA isn't like absolutely all over this, because of, as you say, that deepening relationship that you can offer, not just to your own members who are crying out for this and who are largely going about this on a day-to-day basis in their own clubs, but also to the big brands who will actually finance all this in a recurring way over the next 20, 30, 40 years.
Yeah, and it's 2024, right? You have to move with the times and evolve in a way that allows you to be kind of sustainable for the future. And investing in women is one of the ways of doing it. I mean, I work in motorsport, and we are doing something through my organisation to try and help female drivers get to the top and eventually into F1. And that to motorsport into F1 is quite a scary proposition, because the sport's doing pretty well commercially, right, at the top end of that sport. So why would we shake things up? And what I always say, and it's true of all sports, is this is not about changing this sport. It is about growing this sport. And I think that is the kind of mind shift that I will talk about, to say, you know, this isn't a negative. It doesn't threaten the existing hierarchy or ecosystem or infrastructure. It's actually going to make you sustainable in 10, 20 years. So you best get on board now before you get left behind. I think that's the way I would frame it.
And I think, in fairness, you're right to point out, in the last 18 months since the professionalism has come in, there's been a change at the top of the IRFU, and they have begun to embrace this, and they are beginning to reap some rewards from that.
Yeah, and look, I think from everything I hear, like, Kevin Potts understands what needs to be done, and came in at a very good time for women's rugby, i.e. there was a lot of disgruntlement. I mean, it wasn't that quiet, was it? But there was definitely frustration. And I think he came in at a very good time to try and, you know, he was not a new face, but a new leader for the organisation to really embrace this. And, you know, I know that people are very happy with the work David Humphreys is doing. So everything seems to have come together in the right era. And, you know, I was thinking just before before the call about where are New Zealand in this mix, because they often do this, right? They often are rubbish, frankly, the year before a World Cup and then come in and blow everyone away. But we're in a different era now. We're in a pro era, and Ireland have done a good job of embracing that. And so it may be difficult for New Zealand over the next year. I think it'd be really interesting, but we're definitely moving with new leadership at the RFU in a positive direction for the national team.
So it sounds like you're actually really positive about what the on-the-field thing is going to be like from an Irish perspective. Not getting carried away, obviously the New Zealand team wasn't the full team that played in the World Cup final, but it was still a strong team, as you say. There was a bit of complacency, but at the same time, all of a sudden we might be hopeful about just to round back to the, it's the hope that kills you.
Yeah, it's the hope that kills you. I mean, look, it's too soon to say, but what makes me positive about the international team is that if you look at the personnel within the team and the depth that we're starting to build, we're in a much more positive place than we've been for many years. And everyone will pick out Aoife, obviously, as a star, Dana O'Brien, you know. But I was texting Fiona Colan after the game and I sort of said, actually, I was so impressed with our centre partnership. You know, they didn't get much headlines, but I thought Aoife Dalton and Enya Breen together were phenomenal. And we've got great depth behind there now because Aoife Higgins was actually on the bench. So I think that is why I am radiating some positivity about their trajectory. It's a relatively young team too. And the way in which, you know, if you watch the game, the last line that we score from, so clever. And you haven't seen variations like that. And, you know, women's rugby often, you know, can be quite, I don't know what word to use, maybe more straightforward. But I think we've introduced some variation to the team. We've got the personnel, I think, to make you positive about the future. And they're young and, you know, they look like they enjoy each other's company. And that's really important too.
Yeah, Bevan Parsons still to come back from injury as well. So,
yeah.
Arrows up. Ali, great stuff. Thanks a million. Cheers.
Thank you so much. Bye, guys.